I now get the pleasure of introducing Reverend Jane Espenson. She was ordained in 1996 in the UU denomination in Menominee, Wisconsin, after spending 5 years studying at a United Church of Christ or Congregational Seminary in Minnesota. She's served several congregations in Minnesota and Wisconsin. She's been a lifelong Unitarian Universalist and also always been a humanist. And she's going to be speaking on something that's very near and dear to my heart, especially just lately, which is on issues of reverence and love and how those work in with humanism. Many of you know that I just got back from General Assembly and spent a lot of time mulling on the whole language of reverence thing. So I'm really looking forward to your talk. Reverend Espenson.
Good morning. Let me know. I will try to project. Let me know if you cannot hear me by saying, I can't hear you. I'm just going to move these things. Can I do that? Okay. All right. Got to get my reading glasses on. When pondering this address for the day, I realized that I had a million and one things to say on the subject of humanism and as many angles from which to come at it. As a first-time speaker to your congregation and therefore not knowing what your history as a congregation is or what angles would be the most useful, I have chosen to present this subject strictly from my own experiences and the world's experiences of me. Even as a little girl, I sensed a calling to a religious life. The Hogan family from the street across from us in Duluth were Catholic. And when I was in grade school, I would have sleepovers with Kathy. We would use sleeping bags and sleep on the living room floor. Kathy would always fall asleep before I did, and I would lie awake, my eyes drawn to the quiet golden light that shone over the face of Jesus on the narrow wall to the side of the fireplace. But Jesus, below Jesus, was the Lord's Prayer, and I would read and read the words, bringing them into my mind and into my mouth. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. I thought it was such a beautiful poem and that it made such good sense. And this is how I interpreted it in my mind. It was a prayer to God or to Jesus, or maybe it was really to Mary, beautiful, beautiful Mary. I always thought the Catholics had it right, worshiping a mother instead of always focusing on the greatness of a man. This was the 1960s, and my feminism was already greatly started. Live life on earth as you imagine it to be in heaven. Well, that seemed like a good way to try to live life out in a beautiful and positive way where everyone was nice to each other. Make sure that no one goes hungry. Well, that seemed like a good thing to wish for too. Give us this day our daily bread. Make sure there is no poverty. No hunger. Don't get upset if people walk on your property. And hope that other people would also be nice if I were to trespass on their property, even if they did have a sign posted, no trespassing. Just because I wanted some blueberries or wild strawberries or just wanted to row over to that particular small island and have a picnic. What harm was there in that? Forgive me for this as I would certainly forgive you. I would completely understand if you were to do that. So yes, that part in the prayer seemed very important to me and made a lot of sense. I didn't know what temptation was, but I did understand what evil looked like because I had seen enough scary movies, and I definitely wanted to be delivered from any of those kinds of things. So I thought it was a great thing to request of God. And then that last part, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Well, that was just a great piece of rhythmic poetry, and I loved saying it. This prayer was also sensible to me because I wanted to become a nun when I grew up. And even though my mother was Jewish, and we didn't go to church, and no one in my family believed in God, I really felt drawn to becoming a nun, particularly one in France. Since I love their soft gray nun outfits compared to the severe black ones I saw around town in Duluth. That soft gray was so much friendlier looking. And I wanted to be in an order where they helped the poor and really made a difference in the world, where they didn't just talk about doing things, but where they were really out doing something about the suffering of others. I wanted that, and I wanted to do it in a foreign language. That just added to its appeal. I remember watching movies about nuns or reading books about nuns or even about missionaries, and I wanted to do all the things that they were doing. It seemed like the very best way to live life out, to be a kind and caring person who helped others. I tried praying at night, but I just couldn't figure out who I was actually praying to, since it seemed to me it was just like wishing for something on your birthday when you blow out the candles. Oh, how I wished I could grow up to be someone who did good things in the world and who cared about others and who could really try to end suffering. And then I would picture not God, because I couldn't conjure that up, but me blowing out all the candles and hoping that my wish might come true. I would then say amen and climb into bed, hopeful that the message had been received. I was also very open to having Jesus sit on the edge of my bed, like I heard he did so often for people in prison who had never believed in him before, and then one night there he was, and now they believed. So many of my friends were either Catholic or some kind of Christian that Jesus was with us in our conversations as much as any other topic when I was growing up. I felt as though if there really were a Jesus, and if he really did exist still, that as much as I thought it might be pretty scary to actually wake up some night and see him sitting at the foot of my bed, I would be open to it anyway, because if it was true, if it was real, then I wanted that to happen. I wanted to see him like my friends said that they had. He never did appear, not once. Nor did I ever hear the voice of God, although I really, 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 really listened for it for years. I thought it was all such a beautiful concept. But then my brother died of cancer when he was 19. And my best friend told me that God had killed my brother because we were Jewish and didn't believe in God. At the very moment she said this, I stopped looking for God. Would God really have punished my brother with a suffering cancer because our family was Jewish and didn't believe in God? What a small-minded and mean and terrible entity. How could anyone worship and adore somebody like that? How was that loving or kind or someone good to pray to? It made no sense to me. And I immediately became an atheist. I did, however, still have a very strong call toward a religious life for some reason. And I briefly pondered becoming a rabbi because I was half Jewish after all. But there was still that small issue about God. So I put my religious impulses on the back burner and decided that in 7 years, when I became 21, I would join the Peace Corps. And that I would then accomplish something good in that way. I never did go into the Peace Corps. I lived a year abroad. I went to the university, focused on literature and language. I always liked languages, even though I wasn't going to be that nun in France. I got married and I had kids, and a busy life began in earnest, and 20 years passed by very quickly. And one day, a friend of mine invited me to go to a UU church. I'd never heard of Unitarian Universalism, but I was always open to going to church with my friends, so I looked forward to it. I had no idea that that day would change my life. Here I found a service where there was no Bible being used, but where a reading from Mark Twain's Letters from Earth were read instead. Here there was no pipe organ, but a small chamber orchestra playing some gorgeous piece of classical music. Here the hymns had words I could actually say, rather than just focusing on the melody and not paying too much attention to the usual Jesus and salvation and God language I was used to singing in the churches I visited. Here the sermon was called an address, and it was about things that mattered to me. It was said in perfectly sensible, relevant, everyday language, and I got it. I was transfixed. After the service, I gathered up every single solitary brochure there was in the lobby. What you say about Jesus, what you say about the Bible, what you believe. And I went home and I read, just like I had the Lord's Prayer years before. And I committed to memory those seven purposes and principles. This was it. I had finally found my religious home. And when I went back and told my parents about this, my dad said, "Well, yes, of course. This is how you've been raised." I'm like, "What?" He said, "We just don't like to belong to anything. So we never went, but of course you're Unitarian." It all made sense to me. There were no longer any translations necessary. It was who I was. It was who I had always been. The church that I had visited that day was looking for an assistant RE person, so I applied and was hired. And within days, I became good friends with the student minister there, and she told me how she was in seminary in Chicago, but that she was doing her internship in Minneapolis, where I was. Well, I was the mother of three young children at that time, and so there was no way I could just pack up and go to Chicago or to Boston or to California. And so I felt that once again, here I had felt so close to being able to go and to start this religious life, and once again it would be put on hold. And then this young minister told me about the UCC Seminary, United Theological Seminary, on the outskirts of the Twin Cities. And since the Unitarians used to be Congregationalists, and they broke away from that, she thought maybe if I contacted them, and if they didn't know their own history, remind them of this part, that they might actually allow me to be part of their seminary. So I did contact them, and I was accepted into seminary, and thus began my very long, longer than I had imagined, journey toward becoming an ordained UU minister. I was finally on the path of my calling. But it was not a path paved with jewels. My best friend and sister-in-law, who was a born-again Christian, upon hearing that I was going to study to become a UU minister, told me that she could no longer be my friend. We had gotten pregnant together, raised our children together. We were inseparable. We had, of course, many theological discussions, since she was always trying to guide me toward Jesus and praying for me. And seriously, I have so many people praying for me, I am a shoo-in to heaven. But nevertheless, we loved each other. We were the same person. So this sudden break with her was and is one of the most painful parts of my life. That was 20 years ago, and to this day, she can still not be my friend, because I went public with my humanist thoughts when I became a minister. It was one thing, she told me, to be privately thinking the way that I did, but to speak from a pulpit was now a dangerous thing, a threat to Christianity, and therefore a threat to the world. When I was a hospital chaplain, which is a part of my seminary training, I was often requested by patients or by nursing staff to be the chaplain that they wish to have in their room or on their unit. My supervisor wrote a review of me once to put in my file, noting that I was requested more than any of the other chaplains and that he found this to be very disturbing. Because there is no way you are able to console and to comfort these patients since you do not believe in God. No, the reason you are requested is that these patients see your need to be loved and they feel sorry for you. Imagine that. People are dying, or a family has experienced some immense tragedy in their life, and they're requesting me as their chaplain because I am needy for their love. Not because I can actually bring comfort or consolation, empathy, compassion, and caring. I mean, how could I be that kind of a person since I didn't believe in God? Does a person have to believe in God in order to be a decent, kind, caring, compassionate, empathetic person? I asked my supervisor. The answer, yes. For without God, a human is unable to have a moral compass, unable to determine an ethical path. When I countered my supervisor that he must be mistaken about this, since I actually was able to do those things without God, he leaned over his desk, his face darkened and strained, and he yelled, "So you think you are God?" And I leaned forward and said, "Yes." We are all the children of God, created in God's image. Isn't this so? Isn't this what your religion says? If I am in God's image, would I not be like God with his love and compassion and moral and ethical compass leading my heart in the right direction? Isn't this what we humans are to strive toward? He ordered me out of his office and I was put on review. When I was the consulting minister for the River Falls congregation, still as a student, I was part of the Ministerial Association, and as such was asked to participate in their annual Ecumenical Thanksgiving Day service. It was to be held in the Catholic Church, and I was to be the speaker for that service. The day before the service, we had our usual Ministerial Association meeting, and before the meeting came to a close, the minister leading that day asked us all to stay for a minute because he wanted to talk about something that had come up. And the thing that had come up was that some of the ministers had been telling their congregants to boycott the service because I would be taking away their Christianity. I was stunned, but it was true. This was their fear. Because I didn't believe in God or believe that Jesus was the Son of God, that whatever it was I was going to be speaking about, which they hadn't even asked me to share, would threaten the beliefs of the people listening. I spoke to their fear that they thought I would say anything that would be disrespectful to the beliefs of those who would be coming to that service. I explained UUism to them and our drawing from world religions and our respect for other ways of being in the world. Then I spoke to the fact that they themselves as ministers must be filled with such arrogance, with such a sense of power, to think that it is the minister who gives and who can take away a person's beliefs, rather than believing, as UUs do, that each person comes to their own way of believing themselves. The Thanksgiving Day service happened, and the place was filled, and I spoke about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and his courage to stand against the Nazis, his courage to stand up for what he believed. Many people came up to me afterwards who were members of those other churches, and told me that they hadn't felt threatened at all by what I had said, and that they actually felt it was quite a religious service, even without the God language, and they would have never believed it to be possible if they hadn't been there themselves. And that maybe having a UU church in town was okay, I guess. You seem so Christian. It was exhausting to me to be in a Christian seminary, surrounded by Christian language all the time, although the seminary was very liberal and I was treated very well there. It was exhausting to me to be in these small towns with small-minded people who believed that being a Christian was the only way to be in the world, and that only Christians were good people. My haven was my UU church and my UU friends, or so I thought. One day, I was meeting with the district executive for my regular check-in as a seminary student, and we were having some theological discussion or other, when he told me very pointedly that I should never tell any congregation that I was a humanist, or I would never be hired as their minister. Nor should I ever agree to any talk back after a service because the congregation only wants to rip the ministers to shreds. So, of course, the very first thing I tell any congregation is that I'm a humanist and I love talkbacks. So here I stand today in front of you. What I didn't understand then, but saw quickly thereafter, was that the feeling in the UU world was changing. Humanism was seen as a bad thing. It was stated and always underscored with the words cold, intellectual, no heart. And the word spirituality was taking over in the UU churches, as was God language and Jesus language and Bible passages. They began to be used more and more as sermon fodder. What was happening? What was happening was that the UUA wanted Unitarian Universalism to grow, and pragmatically, understanding that the U.S. is a predominantly Christian country, it felt that reducing the humanist element of UUism, which about 80% of UUs were at that point, and incorporating recognizable religious language, i.e. spirituality, God, Jesus, etc., would draw greater numbers of people and the churches would grow. And then what happened was that churches were encouraged to have ministers versus being lay-led. And the many small humanist congregations, which were mostly lay-led, were not being supported any longer by the UUA. Well, they weren't being told this overtly, of course. They just weren't being recognized. The reason given was that the UUA simply didn't have the resources to support all the independent UU congregations, they were told, which was the code word for small humanist. And so if a congregation wanted to continue to be lay-led, well, that was fine, but it would not be provided with the same support and services as the middle-sized and growing churches which had ministers. This made me furious. Because if this language, God language, spirituality language, all that jargony stuff was going to be coming into the UU churches on such an overt manner and humanists were being pushed out, why didn't the people who want that kind of a church just go and become UCC, United Church of Christ, congregational? And as I was told in seminary, Jane, you know what UCC stands for, don't you? Unitarians Considering Christ. Exactly. They're very similar to us. They just have an overt Christian overlay. But if people like me don't want to have that, then we need to have a place to go, which was the Unitarian Universalist religion. Humanism has had a long and important history within UUism, beginning in the 1930s and then becoming very strong around 1941, all the way up to the 1960s, where it was at its peak. Women's rights and civil rights, abortions rights, environmental concerns were and are the result of strong humanist voices. I knew this. I studied this. I was honored to be counted among those men and women who not only talked about how to live a good life and make changes, but who actually put their actions to words. And now, right at the edge of my becoming an ordained minister, I was finding that the whole tone of UUism was shifting. And I and other humanists were finding themselves marginalized. So not only was I marginalized in my UCC seminary, I was now being marginalized even within Unitarian Universalism. And not only that, I was being labeled as being all head and no heart. One of the leading humanist leaders, UU leaders in the nation, Corin Arisian, was my mentor for all those years. One of the largest humanist congregations in the nation. And he told me, he goes, Janie, if I were going to the UU ministry today, I wouldn't. I am here to tell you that humanism is an incredibly compassionate way to exist in the world. We are empathetic, generous, and giving. Humanists are not out there proselytizing. They're simply getting to the core of things and getting them done. Now, it is true that humanists can talk a lot and often squabble about the nature of a word, and even when looking up the definition, then arguing about which dictionary was used, which edition it was. But when there are important things that need doing in the world, humanists are there. And why? Because a humanist's focus is on the good of humanity, all humanity. And with the care for humanity comes care for the entire world, including the natural world. For how can there not be environmental concerns if the good of humanity is the overarching consideration? Does a humanist miss spirituality talk or God talk? No. And why? Because to be human is to be a spiritual being. Spirituality is being connected to all and to everything, and to care about all and everything. We respond to nature and to music and to silence. We look deeply inside of ourselves, into our hearts and into our minds, looking for the right answers to life's difficult questions. And God talk? Most humanists are atheist or agnostic, or as I say, non-theistic, meaning that God is a moot point. There either is God or there isn't God. I don't know. But what I do know is that we exist here and now, and so the call is for us to be the very best humans we can be for each other and to each other and for and to every aspect of the world. We are not cold and heartless and purely intellectual, as though that's even a bad thing. No. We are warm and compassionate, loving and caring and empathetic. Our hopes and dreams are those which provide the best life for each and every person, regardless of age and gender, sexual orientation, or belief. We have a strong voice and a strong heart to offer the world, and this UU faith is the perfect place within which to get things done. Because a group of people, a presence in the community, a place of religion that is recognizable to the masses, is the best jumping-off place for a real change to come about. With a new president in the UUA, who is a man of social conscience and social action, a man who appears to be grounded solidly here on earth and not caught up with the vapid jargon of the recent UU past, I feel that there are great days ahead where UUism can make itself widely known because of what we stand for and who we are and what we do. And the strong humanist core of this religion is, I believe, where the true spirituality of UUism lies. What do we need more than our own humanity when what lies within us is truly enough? Thank you.